Post-traumatic stress disorder is a mental health condition that's triggered by exposure to a single or recurring traumatic event. Those with PTSD can experience flashbacks, nightmares, and anxiety. Symptoms that can last for months or years. On this episode, we're learning more about PTSD. Thanks for listening and subscribing to Learning More, where each week we bring you a new story about people, inventions, pop culture, and life. I'm Russ, and this week we are learning more about post-traumatic stress disorder. Let's start by looking at the numbers. 70% of adults will experience at least one traumatic event in their lifetime, and 20% of people who experience a traumatic event will develop PTSD. In any given year, about 8 million people are diagnosed with PTSD. And statistically, 1 in 13 people that are listening to this podcast right now will develop PTSD at some point in their life. With the stress of the pandemic, the riots, the job losses, the economic uncertainty, it's possible that these stats will go up. So today, let's learn a little more about PTSD. We're going to be talking with a psychologist who has been working in the field for 12 years, a filmmaker that created a short film about the impact of PTSD on the children of vets. And then we'll talk with the founder of Stark Labs, where research is being done using technology to help those with PTSD. Okay, so I realize you may not even know what post-traumatic stress disorder is. So why don't we get a little explanation? And I'm no doctor, so why don't we bring a doctor on?
Dr. Leila Ansari, I'm a clinical psychologist. I've been working in the field in the Bay Area about 12 years.
Oh, perfect. Thank you, Leila, for joining me today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So you've been working in the field there for 12 years. When do people typically come in to see you?
People are usually experiencing symptoms that will bring them in for help, or at least that's been my experience. Something will be the catalyst for them in their lives. They'll come in not knowing they have PTSD, but just saying, I can't sleep, and I keep having these really intrusive thoughts, and I can't stop thinking about it. They'll come into me thinking anxiety or thinking I'm having trouble dealing with abuse from my childhood, but they won't necessarily come in saying, I think I have PTSD.
So PTSD can be based on a single event or exposure over time, correct?
Right, absolutely. So you could be diagnosed with it after experiencing a single event. There are also individuals that experience PTSD after chronic exposure.
If someone is diagnosed with PTSD, what exactly does that mean?
Sure, I can give you an idea of that. It's pretty complicated, so I'll just give you the basics. For a diagnosis of PTSD, there needs to be a trauma that's experienced. Then you need to have endorsements in certain other areas. There's intrusion symptoms, which would be like intrusive dreams or memories. Avoidance symptoms, like avoiding anything that reminds you of the event. You'll also need to have a symptom or more in negative alterations of cognition and mood. An example of that would be anhedonia. Anhedonia is a lack of pleasure in things. So you might just be walking around not finding pleasure in any of the things maybe you used to enjoy. Alterations in arousal and activity. And an example of that would be hypervigilance. You know, we've heard about that one, seeing movies about war vets and the experience of hypervigilance, like a startle response where everything startles them, or they're up at night and they can't sleep well. All these symptoms would be problematic for a person socially, occupationally. It would cause significant distress in areas of their life. So that's a basic rundown of PTSD.
Later in the episode, we'll be talking about CPTSD, or complex post-traumatic stress disorder. Can you tell us a little about that?
CPTSD occurs in people who have been subjected to ongoing traumatizing experiences, usually over the course of months or years. This can include sexual, physical abuse, domestic violence, living in a war zone, While there are circumstances where adults develop CPTSD, it's most often seen in those whose trauma occurred in childhood. With complex PTSD, your core identity can be affected and you can experience significant emotional dysregulation. Emotional dysregulation would be angry outbursts of crying, throwing objects, aggression toward others, significant dysfunction with emotional regulation, you know? So there are some differences, and I don't know all of them. I'm just learning about it like many others, and research is new, but we've already noticed that there are differences.
And we'll be talking a little more about that research later in the show. But before we go, I do want to also talk to you about transgenerational trauma. Can you tell us a little about that?
Transgenerational trauma refers to trauma that passes through the generations. So enslavement, genocide, sexual abuse, again, domestic violence, extreme poverty, these are all common sources of trauma that can lead to transgenerational trauma. So the idea is that not only can someone experience trauma, but they can then pass the symptoms and behaviors of trauma survival on to their children, who then will pass it on to their children, et cetera. This could be through parenting practices, behavioral problems, violence, harmful substance use, and mental health issues.
If someone is experiencing some of the symptoms that you discussed today, what is their next step? What should they do?
As a clinician, I would encourage people to seek out professional help, mental health help, and get an assessment.
All right. So as you can tell, this is a difficult topic with many layers. When we come back, we're going to talk with a filmmaker about a project that he put together, a short film that may help us understand a little bit more about PTSD. We'll be starting up our podcast in just a second, but first I have to tell you about Anchor. Anchor is the easiest way to make a podcast. And trust me, putting together a daily podcast can be difficult. Putting together any podcast can be difficult. So you want to take shortcuts wherever you can, and Anchor does that for you. They distribute your podcast so you could be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Also, they've got the editing tools right there on your phone and on your computer. Just download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Welcome back to Learning More. We continue our talk about PTSD. I'm joined now by Trev Harwood, the founder of Soaring Productions and the child of a Vietnam War vet. He joins me to discuss his short film, Lamentations. Trev, thanks for joining me. Can you share a little about your video?
Yeah, no worries, mate. Look, the video is actually a true life story from one of my members from my private group of children of Vietnam veterans. It's a story about how our fathers who suffer from PTSD and flashbacks and memories from the war and the emotional detachment also that they had to deal with when they came back from Vietnam and how it's actually affected us, the children of Vietnam veterans. So the best way for me to explain that was through a video of a little girl, basically, who is just loves her dad dearly and just wants to do everything to gain his attention. She's doing a little drawing and her dad's shushing her and telling her to shut up and all that because he's watching the show, which is something that has resonated with a lot of kids who has their father or mother who served over in Vietnam, that you walk on eggshells when dad's in the mood to watch TV. It's time for you to be quiet and you don't talk.
Tell us a little about growing up and about your dad.
Well, like you said at the beginning, I am a child of a Vietnam veteran. My dad served in 1968 to 69 in the Signal Squadron. Coming home, of course, just like over in America, they weren't welcomed too well in our country. Growing up, I saw my dad do his very best to become a father, a parent, a husband. And look, he was fantastic with how he brought us up. We had a lovely household, but there was that emotional detachment going on where some days I come home and it was like walking on eggshells. You knew dad was in a mood and you just stayed away from him. So 15 years ago, I came up with this idea to actually make this documentary because I went through a divorce and I had to do some reflection on that. And I found it hard to really love someone. And I had a look at the divorce rates around that time, and the greatest percentage of people who were divorced fell in the category of children of Vietnam veterans. So I started to put a bit of a link together and thought, wonder if because of our dad's emotional detachment from coming home from Vietnam, has that affected me growing up? So the whole documentary came to a point where I'm asking questions. I'm not saying there is 100% an effect. The questions are being asked, and I've got a private group with nearly 800 members, a lot of Americans and Australians, New Zealanders, that are all sharing their stories. And it's coming to that conclusion that, yeah, there is a massive effect of the Vietnam War on us, the children of Vietnam veterans.
With your dad, was it all gloom and doom?
Oh, not at all. Look, I mean, in the video, I really tried to explain this too, that we actually don't blame our dads for anything that has gone on with us or how we've turned out. We actually blame the war and the government for the lack of support. My dad did a fantastic job. You know, raising us kids. He was always involved with our football or AFL, you know, the Australian League football over here, or cricket or whatever sports that we're a part of. He was there as a team manager or whatever he could be a part of, president. He was always involved all the time. But there was just that emotionally detached. But then there was also the hard times where you see him struggling with his demons and so forth. It wasn't all doom and gloom.
Well, that's good to hear. From research that I've done on this, that one of the issues with dealing with somebody that has suffered from PTSD is you never know what you're going to get.
Look, that was 100%. You know, I mean, I remember growing up, I used to go home to some of my mate's house after school, and I saw the interaction between him and his dad and the family environment, and I thought, My house is so much different to that. You know, some days I could come home and it would be all happy and cheery and you'll be laughing, and other days we'd come home and dad wouldn't talk to you for some unknown reason. As a little boy, you think, what have I done to upset dad?
That's confusing.
Yeah. And so you start blaming yourself, and then you start trying to do things to seek your father's approval because it wasn't always there, because he was dealing with his demons, maybe having flashbacks. And I remember he told me horrible stories. One story I remember, I went over there, this is not long ago, with my daughter, who was around about 14 years of age at the time. And I walked in, my dad goes, "You shouldn't be here." And I'm like, "Why, is it a bad time? Should I let you know beforehand that I was coming home?" He goes, "No, you shouldn't be here." And he had tears in his eyes. And he had a bottle of scotch next to him, and he was remembering an incident over in Vietnam where a guy pulled him back, took two more steps and stood on a landmine and blew up. Wow. And it took off half of my dad's ear. Ugh. And so then I started to realize what he meant. He meant that he should have died over in Vietnam and I shouldn't be alive. Wow. And that really affected me. And my daughter's like, "Oh my goodness, what?" You know, I mean, these are the things that a 22-year-old had to deal with coming back from Vietnam with no help from the government to deal with these issues. I mean, we have to understand the mind frame of what's going on here. I mean, the average age was like 22 years of age of a veteran who served over in Vietnam. So these are young kids. I don't know about you, Russ, but I look back at myself when I was 22 years of age. I wasn't that mature. I was too busy running around playing football, and I mean, to be sucked out of your normal environment, taken over to a foreign land, and it's basically you've got to kill or be killed for 12 months, basically, and then get told to come back and go back into society and get on with life. And by the way, you're not allowed to talk about it because the society doesn't like you.
We've got to talk about this. How do we stop the cycle? How do we stop it from going to the next level, the next generation? I mean, you mentioned your daughter was there with you and your dad. How do we stop it?
That is a very, very good question, Russ. I think that one of the best things is actually talking about it, mm-hmm. is actually getting it out there in the open.
Yeah.
I know that my private group of children of Vietnam veterans, that there's like I said, almost 800 members in that group, that there has been a lot of healing already done in that group by people having a safe place where they're not ridiculed or put down upon. Because a lot of the times through society, we've been saying that, you know what, we infect ourselves into our dad's trauma to gain attention. It's not that at all. I mean, we're a part of that trauma just from a different point of view. So talking about it with other people who can relate to that really helps. Go and get some help. Talk to a counselor. Work out ways how you can deal with your own PTSD. And it's all about management. I don't think it ever goes away. But like I said, I'm not a doctor. But I know after I've started to address my own issues and sit down with my daughters or sit down with my son and talk about these issues, that it really starts to help. And I think by doing that, we can actually stop that on-flow effect.
Trev, thank you for joining us and sharing your story and this video with us. If you're listening to this podcast and you have not yet seen the video, I strongly suggest you go check it out. It's on YouTube. There's a link in the description of this podcast. We'll continue our conversation about PTSD right after this. Again, thank you for listening to Learning More, and thank you for subscribing. Today, we are learning more about PTSD, and I wanted to find a doctor that could really help us, and I found one that is very well qualified to talk about this topic.
I'm Dr. Arash Jalambath. I'm a physician psychiatrist. I'm specialized in research, neurobiology, and treatment of anxiety disorders and trauma, PTSD. I'm an associate professor at Wayne State University Department of Psychiatry, and I am also director of the Stress, Trauma, and Anxiety Research Clinic in that department.
See, I told you, I found the right person to talk to us about this. So, Arash, you're a practicing clinical psychologist, and you also do research in the field of PTSD and anxiety. Can you tell us a little about that research?
My research is mostly focused on the neurobiology of PTSD and anxiety, basically the impact these illnesses have on the brain and on the body and how we can track them and find neurobiological markers in the brain and body to basically have a better understanding of where we should target for treatment and also how to predict who may or may not have a higher chance of developing PTSD. Another area of my work is enhancing and improving our ways of treatment. We have body-based dance and movement, art therapy interventions for traumatized children. We also are using some very cool advanced technologies of augmented reality and mixed reality in combination with telemedicine for allowing in vivo exposure therapy for a range of disorders from phobias to post-traumatic stress disorder. The very simple form is that you're afraid of spiders, you wear the goggles, you're in your living room, I grab a spider from the cloud and put it on your wall.
Okay, so we can see how exposure therapy can work for phobias. How are you using this treatment for, let's say, combat vets with PTSD?
In the case of PTSD, let's say someone has been exposed to combat, now the brain generalizes all fear response to anything related to what they had experienced in combat. Let's say an IED, because may look like a roadkill, they see the roadkill and they're terrified. 4th of July is one of the worst times for combat veterans with PTSD because those loud noises resemble explosions in the war. So it's a very effective treatment. The problem is that if you came to my office, I don't have a spider, I don't have a snake, I don't have a dog in my office. So it's an underutilized effective treatment.
Arash uses augmented reality to allow those being treated to interact with virtual objects within their own environment. Augmented reality is different from virtual reality because you use glasses to see the world around you, but because his team also sees a 3D map of your real world, they can place virtual objects in your world so you see them as if they are really there. They hold a patent for their system and they can use this system to treat phobias and PTSD. I might be getting ahead of myself here by talking about advancements in treatment. Maybe we should start in the beginning to see who is more susceptible to suffering from PTSD. Does heredity play a role in making us more susceptible to PTSD?
What we see in the brain, in the body, in the proteins, in all over the place in our physical existence are basically the result of our genetic composition. There are genes that are transcribed and lead to formation of any bodily aspects, the cells, the molecules in the cells, and the neurons, and how the neurons interact with each other. And we may have some differences in genetic, very, very minor differences across ourselves. Like what, so for some genes, one person may have one more of one form of it or less of the other form. And we are learning that these genetic differences in the area that lead to basically production of whether it's neurotransmitters, chemicals in the brain, or receptors for these, or what leads to the pathways, related to the areas impacted by PTSD or anxiety disorders, may predict vulnerability. Like we're gradually learning that if I have one genetic variant, if I'm traumatized, I may have a higher chance or lower chance of developing PTSD. Then it comes to epigenetics. Epigenetics is beyond if I have one genetic variation or not. It is more of if that gene is transcribed or not, which means a gene can be methylated. A molecule sits on the gene and deactivates it. And when the gene wants to be activated, that molecule is removed, and now the gene is like bare and can be transcribed to whatever product is end product of this genetic variation. So we are also looking at epigenetic changes as a result of the trauma, as a result of the environmental impact. So we are, let's say in our cohort, we are looking longitudinally in children who were traumatized by war. How will these epigenetic changes, the gene is the same, but the transcription changes through the time, how would they relate to the symptoms and development of the symptoms and evolution of these symptoms? And ultimately, potentially, intergenerational transfer of trauma, which is, has been a question for a long time about how parents' trauma can impact the behavior of their children.
Okay, so this brings to mind the video that Trev put together. We talked about that in the prior segment, and I hope that those of you listening have seen the video. In this video, you have the daughter of a Vietnam vet that is experiencing trauma because of her dad's trauma. She interrupts his TV show, and she's yelled at. She taps him on the shoulder, and he has a flashback. It's clear that the abuse can cause PTSD in the child, but is the child more susceptible to PTSD because she shares the DNA of her father?
Brace yourself for a very complicated answer.
Okay.
Because in research, we tend to try to simplify things because we have to simplify things to be able to just look at one aspect of the issue. But in real clinical work, it's very much more complicated. So let's say a parent is traumatized and then they bear a child and they have a child. So number one, the parent could have already genes that makes them vulnerable to the impact of trauma, which may already be transferred to the child that might make them vulnerable to anxiety and trauma by itself. There could be the epigenetic changes which could have been transferred. Besides that, there are a ton of behavioral learning patterns here. If I was raised seeing my mom or my dad always constantly afraid of the world, who do we learn from about the world? How do I learn how scary or safe the environment and the world is? It's our parents. We look at our parents because we are not cognitively developed as a kid. I look at my dad. If I'm mad, my dad is always worried about everything. I learned that the world is not a safe place, and I learned to be worrying and avoiding things. So that's one way. Not only let's say if there's violence and aggression, I'm impacted by it, but also I learned from my parents about how to deal with the environment, how they're protective or overprotective. A traumatized parent could be overprotective of a kid, leading to the kid being scared. The parents may have like self-protecting behaviors that they are not even talking about it. The kid just watches the parent and learns that. And the other part comes to childhood trauma. That is the other question. There's a ton of research in childhood trauma. A big, big chunk of NIH money is going to looking at the impact of childhood trauma because we are learning how it can affect adults. If someone is traumatized as a child, they have a higher chance of PTSD if they are traumatized in adulthood. There's a higher chance of obesity, cardiovascular disease, metabolic disorders, diabetes, pain disorders, depression, substance use. So childhood trauma by itself is, I just found an opportunity to say, it's a very important thing to address right in childhood. But here, if a father gets angry and then, so based on that one, I watched the video, it was a very good example of showing how a person with PTSD might have flashbacks, might have anger a lot of times. I would say most of the times is a response to fear and loss of control. They may have these issues and then substance use or alcohol, which was there, trying to numb themselves. But based on that one incident, it's very hard to me to say what happens to the kid.
Right.
But we know chronic childhood trauma, repeated childhood abuse, neglect, non-loving environments really affect a person's adulthood.
Well, you know, let's talk about the environment that we're in right now. We're recording this during the pandemic. And you've got to think about the environment that we're putting the kids in and even ourselves in at this point. Well, Trev's video was one of the reasons why I wanted to put together this podcast about PTSD. The other is the pandemic. Will the anxiety, the trauma, and the isolation of the pandemic cause a PTSD pandemic in the future?
So we already have the data from previous pandemics and also this pandemic that they do highly increase the chance of mental illness, whether it's anxiety, depression, suicide, substance use, trauma symptomatology, including PTSD. We kind of, all of us have a general idea of why, because all of a sudden, so there are some components which contribute to making something traumatized or very stressful. One is lack of control. We don't have much control over this, right? We don't know how to fix it. We don't know when it ends. We don't know how, like we know some idea, have some ideas about how to protect ourselves, but not fully protect ourselves, especially in the beginning of the pandemic. We knew less and less because less scientific data was coming. There is a transition. There was a huge transition happening at this time during the beginning of the pandemic. In one day, it was not like they told you, okay, over the next 6 months, we'll transition from working at the office to going at home. No, in one day, now you're working from home, you're spending most of your time and stuff with your colleagues, with your spouse, you're not going to the gym, you're not eating at the restaurant. All these transitions came at the same time and crushed people. And so these, a lot of the variables are here which are very stressful to people. And isolation, we are social animals. Besides all the uncertainties, all the political mishaps came and joined it, and also people lost their jobs, people lost their income. So in general, yes, the answer is mental illness in general and trauma also can worsen. There are specific groups in whom trauma is very high. First responders, frontline workers. We have very high level of trauma symptoms among healthcare workers who were involved in this, because PTSD doesn't only develop when something happens to me. Exposure to something terrible happening to someone else can lead also to PTSD, which is something we see in the frontline workers and also first responders. Police officers have a very high level of PTSD because they see terrible things on a day-to-day basis, on a chronic basis. Firefighters also, EMS workers as well. There were a lot of people who got the illness. They had to go through terrible, almost dying experience of the ICU. There were people who lost family members. But when it comes to people who already did have PTSD, well, I can see it's a different angle. Some people also in general with anxiety, and please feel free to stop me anytime I'm talking too much.
You're doing great.
Yeah. When it comes to people with like high anxiety, some people actually like, some of my anxious patients tell me, oh, now this is the life I had because I didn't want to go out. I didn't want to associate with a lot of people.
Right.
All of these things now are validated. Some of my anxieties are validated. But at the same time, a lot of other people, they have more stressors. So you already are a very anxious person. More stress makes it a lot worse because you already are using a big chunk of your resilience fighting the anxiety. And then there is the unemployment, there's difficulty with the finances, social isolation, especially for those who already had limited social resources. There was initially difficulty in access to care, which thankfully to telepsychiatry and telemedicine, it is actually got easier to have access to the providers and to the help that people need. There was like all the bad news, all the negative news coming for an anxious person could be very negative. Substance use rates because of a lot of these stressors that we talked about could increase, which can worsen any comorbidity. And not to mention the terrible political years that we had in terms of, regardless of what side of the political argument the person was, I was seeing in my patients. And one of my biggest advice to my patients was to limit their exposure to cable news to 30 minutes a day and not more. Because that was really, really damaging to their mental health.
Yeah, you know, I think that that's some great advice for everyone. I know that you've also created an app that can help. Can you tell us a little about that app?
Yeah, sure. So during the time of the pandemic where everything was closed and there was so much stress in people, so I had a few talks about how to deal with and cope with the stress of pandemic. And I also earlier mentioned that we work with mixed reality and technologies. And then we said, well, how about we create an app with this knowledge, which can cool look and funny to people so they can basically get a short tutorial of very practical ways of dealing with the pandemic stress and reducing the stress. So basically what we did was that we created a phone app, which is free, as you mentioned, Pandemic Stress Tips. And this app, basically, when you download it, you will have a 3D version of a doctor with a dog. Actually, you can add as many dogs as you want. It's in your living room that is talking to you and basically saying bringing some tips about how to deal and cope with the stress of pandemic. And it's very cool. You can walk around this person and it has cool 3D augmented reality aspects to make it interesting.
Arash, thank you so much for joining me today and helping us learn more about PTSD.
It's a pleasure. If I can add just one sentence, that would be so a lot of times people are scared of such things, or the stigma is because people see this as, oh, if I have PTSD, it's going to be debilitating me for the rest of my life, so I will deny it. But the reality is we have very effective treatments. If someone has been traumatized and they have these symptoms, they don't have to suffer for the rest of their life. Everybody deserves to have a happy and productive life. And we can help a lot with specifically PTSD. That's the good news.
Well, Arash, thank you for leaving us on a good note there. As you can see, this is a complicated topic. And this entire podcast, there's no way that we could cover everything about PTSD. I have placed some links in the podcast description. If you feel like you are suffering from PTSD or you know somebody that is suffering from PTSD, take a look at the links in the description for additional resources and some additional help for you. I want to thank Layla, Trev, and Arash for helping us all learn more about PTSD. Hey, we do our best to present all of the correct information within the podcast, as do our guests. So if we made a mistake and you heard it, you're super smart, and we're super sorry. This has been an X Audio podcast production. I'm Russ, and I'll talk to you next week.